It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning and welcome to the Financial Cafe. Good morning, Chancellor. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on, Larry.
I'm so proud and privileged to have you join me today on the Financial Cafe. You know, we've been doing the show about a year and a half now. We've got a fairly decent listening audience, I believe, interested in finding out about what's going on in the world of finance. Everybody wants to make money. Everybody wants to retire someday. And we work towards both of those goals. But today on the market segment, we have to talk about what's going on. We hit 23,000 on Wednesday. It's the first time in history that the Dow has reached that particular point. And then actually, U.S. equities fell on early sessions today. The Dow Jones average is down about 2.6% on tech giant Apple. Amidst reports of lower iPhone orders, iPhone 8 orders. Have you got yours yet?
Not yet.
Okay. My wife was using an iPhone 5 for about the last 7 years, and she really did not want to give it up. And then the battery started expanding, and it quit working, so I had to get her a new phone about a month ago. And now she loves it. So lots of good things coming down. The S&P 500 fell 0.5%. That was based on technology dropping about 1% and led decliners. Shares of Philip Morris fell 4%. Those were among the worst performers on the index after posting weaker than expected early. So we hit a peak, but it's kind of dropping off a little bit. NASDAQ composite slipped 0.9%, with Facebook and Google, parent Alphabet, Netflix, and Amazon were down about 1%. So, you know, the one thing about the market we do know is it goes up and it goes down. And we just can't predict when, but every probably two, three out of 10 years, it's going to go down. And when you look at history, we have to go back 30 years today. Actually, the 19th of October, 30 years ago, was considered Black Monday. It was the worst day in U.S. stock market history. And that day, the S&P plunged 20.5%. The Dow dropped 22%. Do you remember that day, Chancellor, or where were you in 1987?
1987, I was moving that year from Tallahassee, Florida to Kansas City, Missouri.
So it probably didn't have a major impact on what you were doing at that particular point in time.
Not then, no.
Early in the career. But, you know, since that crash 30 years ago, the Dow has averaged 0.19% gain every October 19th. And about two-thirds of the time, it has had positive returns. So, you know, history does repeat itself, and we have to kind of look at what's going on in that particular area. We've had some really strong markets lately, partially because fundamentals are strong. Fiscal policy hopes are certainly a component of that. And if you look at Wall Street, they continue to digest corporate earnings reports this year. eBay reported better than expected quarterly revenue, along with earnings per share, which exceeded expectations. And if we look at some of the factors, well, what's different about today versus 30 years ago? Well, there's a lot of things, because that drop 30 years ago, the S&P actually went down 508 points. That would amount to an equivalent loss today of only about 2.2%. So, you know, it was significant, over 20% back then, or 22.6%, but today it wouldn't be that great. But if we did have a 22% drop today, we drop off 5,000 points. So all of a sudden, our 23,000, we'd be back down around 18,000. I think that would get some people's attention. It definitely would not be a good thing. But there's a lot of things in place today we didn't have back there 30 years ago. One of the keys, and there's a few parallels that are worth mentioning, the rally back in 82 through 87 followed a 16-year bear market. Stocks were extremely volatile, big rallies and sell-offs. The period before the bull market started, stocks were essentially unchanged. And that's before accounting for a lot of the inflation. If you remember in the 70s and 80s, I remember interest rates up at 12 and 15%. We got our first mortgage in 1975, and we got 8%. We were thrilled. You know, today people look at you funny if you mention anything over 3 or 4%. So times, you know, definitely do change. So the market has continued. The start of 1987 saw a hot market running away. You know, it only took 2 years to regain what was lost in 1987. So the market does come around, and what we're looking at today is nothing we haven't seen before. There's a lot of fundamentals that are in place. There's a lot of cash. Big companies have a lot of cash on their books today. They are expanding. We're seeing growth in terms of retirement plan contributions. Hiring is good because unemployment shows unemployment is low. So overall, I think we're not in too bad a shape economically. What are your thoughts about that?
I think there's a lot of optimism out there, obviously, as reflected by the market. And I'm feeling better about things because Illinois has a higher education budget, which we haven't had for the last couple of years.
And that is amazing. Being an Illinois resident myself, I'm well aware of that because it's been a little tenuous over that period of time, not having a budget, not knowing what's going on, taxes going up, real estate in particular, as well as income taxes. So, well, that's kind of where we're at in today's environment. But let's talk about what we came here to talk about, and that's you. That's a good way to start. Tell me a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up originally?
I grew up about 30 miles north of Alton in a small town called Greenfield, Illinois, population around 1,200. And my parents were on the farm. Several generations of farmers in my family. I have two brothers that are still farming in the Greenfield area.
It's a great area. I've been up through there. We have some relatives up in Jerseyville and Taylorville and Jacksonville. So, you know, anywhere out in the rural area of Illinois, I think is a great place to raise a family, particularly in today's environment. When you thought about, you got out of high school and you came to SIUE. What was your thought process?
I was actually first-generation college student. My grandparents graduated from eighth grade, my parents from high school. And so I hadn't really thought a lot about college. So when I finished high school in 1974, I went to community college. I went to Lewis and Clark for 2 years. And there was a wonderful director of the music program, Harlan Hoke, that was an SIUE grad. Mm-hmm. And so when it came time, as I was nearing my final classes at Lewis and Clark, he suggested that I check into SIUE. There was a wonderful piano teacher here. That was my area of study, music education and piano. And so he pointed me this direction. I came over and auditioned, and a wonderful teacher by the name of Ruslan Zinska, a piano faculty member here, accepted me into the program, and that's how I ended up at SIUE.
Were you always interested in music?
I was. As far back as I could remember, I wanted to be a teacher, and my high school music experiences, I really enjoyed them, and I had some success at them. So I kind of formulated the idea that I wanted to be a high school band director. Jerry Rubel was my high school band director. He was a dynamo, and that's kind of where I thought I was headed, to be a high school band director.
And look where you are today.
Yeah, there are some days where I think, well, okay, that'd be a good thing to be a high school band director. But no, most of the time I really have a great time as a chancellor.
I'm sure it would have its own challenges, but certainly a lot different than what you're doing today. And I have to agree, SIUE, I was back here a few years before you were, believe it or not, back started in 1971. And got involved with Dr. Leonard Van Camp. You probably remember Dr. Van Camp, who's since passed away, but spent a number of years with Concert Chorale. We toured the country, did a lot of singing and beautiful music of the Beethoven, Mozart, and a lot of the traditional, as well as concerts here on campus. So great department, a lot of fun, and you know, still involved in music at church. So you thought, you know, band director in music. So what was your next step after SIUE?
Well, I want to just echo what you said. Leonard Van Camp was one of the important people in my life here. I mentioned Ruth, Leonard, and then a lady by the name of Janetta Haley. She was my music education mentor, and I still stay in touch with her. She was my student teaching supervisor at Edwardsville High School in the spring of 1978.
Wow.
And Leonard Van Camp, in the summer of 1978, I was in Concert Chorale as well, and so we did a tour of Europe, and mm-hmm. That really made me think a lot about the world in general and what I wanted to do. And so I came back and for 2 years in 1979 and in 1980, I pursued master's degree program in piano and in music education here at SIUE. And as I got near the end of that, it was interesting because, you know, you reach those forks in the road. I got a call from someone in Greene County who wanted to know if I would like to come back and be the high school band director. and about that same time, my thesis supervisor, Bill Claudson, he had some contacts at Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida, and he said, well, what do you think about going on to do a PhD at his alma mater, Florida State? And so that was one of those forks in the road, and part of my decision-making, I have to tell you, was that those the listeners that remember the winters of 78, 79, and 80 in Illinois, those were pretty tough winters. A lot of snow, a lot of cold weather. So there was just something about the warmth of Florida that kind of pulled me in that direction.
Looking pretty good.
So I went down there, and I did my PhD program and then stayed on and worked at Florida State University from 1980 to 87.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing. In my own career, I remember, unfortunately, it's one thing that I had wished I had done, actually. I had the opportunity with Dr. Van Camp to go to Europe on some of those tours, but work got in the way. I finished my degree here in three and a half years, and I had a job offer, something that many people were quite fond of getting. And they said, you know, come to work. And because I was able to do that, I passed on going to Europe. So one of those things you look back and you kind of wish, you know, you might have done, would have been fun. But we did tour the U.S. extensively. And when I went to work, I, you know, stayed with that career for 17, 18 years, did a lot of things, prepared me for my second career, which I've been in now close to 25 years in the financial area. And it worked out very well. But I do remember those winters. My daughter was born in July 19th of 1981, and that winter, as I recall, was about 3.5 feet of snow that came down. We lived in Iron Mountain Lake in Glen Carbon, and we couldn't get out of our subdivision for several days. Mm-hmm. So it was a matter of hoofing it up to the road to try and get milk and all the fun things you do with a newborn, you know.
The thing that I remember about those winters is that eventually, by the second or the third one, everyone discovered snowmobiles. And so there were lots of people in Greene County who had snowmobiles. And that was really a very good way to get around for a lot of many months of those years. And then it seemed like 3 or 4 years later, the snow kind of stopped and everybody had their snowmobile out in the front yard with a for sale sign on it.
It was a good thought at the time, you know. There were a lot of people bought four-wheel drive vehicles at that point, too, and mm-hmm. some of them discovered that you get over about 18 inches. It doesn't do you a whole lot of good, but nevertheless, unless you have a plow on the front of it. But, yeah, that was fun. When you think about your time here at SIUE, what do you remember most about it? We've talked about a lot of the key thing were the professors and our mentors. I had a number of them during my period of time also. But other than that, what comes to your mind?
Well, I spent a lot of time, because I was a piano performance major, I spent a lot of time in practice rooms. I tried to practice about 4 to 6 hours a day when I was in college, and then you had classes on top of that. And I remember a lot of good times in ensembles, a lot of rehearsals. And so whether it was Concert Chorale, I played in a wind ensemble for a while. Dr. Van Camp had a community choral group, and I sang in that, and we did a lot of the big works, requiems and things like that when I was here. So I did not live on campus. There really weren't that many people living on campus back in the 1970s. I had this entrepreneurial idea that when I graduated from high school after Lewis and Clark, I bought a trailer, and it had three tiny bedrooms, and I rented it out to two other folks. So that helped kind of pay the bills for college, having the two roommates.
Well, you started a entrepreneurial spirit early. That's for sure. Well, I was fortunate in that I didn't live on campus. They had Tower Lake, but that was about it back in the day. And now Cougar Village, of course, been renamed quite a long time ago. My current business location, as you know from prior conversations, is where I grew up. Mm-hmm. So I didn't walk, but it was probably 2 miles from campus. So it made it pretty easy to get here, which was kind of nice because I spent, I was thinking about it, it was 46 years ago in October. I probably first sat in this studio here at WSIE on the air and did a show for about 18 months. It was every Saturday and Sunday from, I got to the studio at 6 a.m. and went off my tour of duty at about noon. So it was a long Saturday and Sunday for a while, but spent a lot of time here at the studio with no one else around, especially on those days there was 3 foot of snow.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any other organizations you belonged to while you were here on campus?
Because I commuted, I really wasn't a part of the student government. I wasn't a part of Greek life the way that so many of the students are now. And it's one of the things, looking back, I kind of regret. And it's also one of the things that as I walk around the campus now, there's just much more of a feeling of a residential presence of the students. I think they are involved a lot more in SIUE activities than I was, focusing largely on getting through music.
I remember those days because, you know, I worked at the station. I was a student worker. I think made, you know, $2.75 an hour, or if it was even that back then. So I spent a lot of time working, spent a great deal of time in class. And that was about it. There wasn't time. I did belong to Alpha Phi Omega, which is a service fraternity. And we did spend some time doing a lot of service projects around the community and on campus and whatnot. And I remember the homecomings back then. I was reminiscing with Alan Kerr, the president of the Alumni Association, mm-hmm. when I interviewed him a month or so ago about the days when we did trike races in the quad, and we did all types of, you know, water balloons and all kinds of fun stuff. And we even had a bonfire. He kind of looked at me like, you had a bonfire on campus? I said, yeah, we built one out of railroad ties, believe it or not. It was about 20 feet tall, and we lit it. And it burned, you know, it was out in the far parking lot, you know, in the fan lots when they were rock lots.
Yeah.
And it was a fun time, even being a part of that back then. But yeah, you work, you go to school, you get your degree, and then you move on with life.
There were some things that I remember from the Goshen Lounge, and this year was the 50th anniversary of the Morris University Center, what we call the MUC now. And so we did a little research on that, and it's just incredible how many different kinds of things have taken place in that area that we call the Goshen Lounge. I mean, we've had mechanical bulls, we've had sand volleyball, we had ice skating in there at one point. It was just incredible how many different kinds of things that the students did.
Well, it was then certainly a center of activity. Mm-hmm. I know when we had any of our on-campus meetings, they were upstairs in the rooms that still exist today, been remodeled a few times probably since then. But a lot of activity, certainly much less than there is today. What did you find, any challenges you found back then when you were at SIU?
Well, I could say that the biggest challenge I found every day at SIUE was walking from that parking lot on the east side of campus to Dunham Building, or Communications Building, as we called it then, particularly in January and February when that wind was out of the north and there was a wind chill of about 10 below. There was a lot of walking. But, you know, the campus has changed in terms of more buildings. The trees are bigger, and there's a little more parking. People can get a little closer to buildings now, and particularly particularly the students in the residence facilities, they have a very nice position and can get to class in just a couple of minutes. But, the challenges that I had, I think they were great challenges. It was the rigor of trying to become a good musician and the faculty members challenging us to be engaged, to be involved in music activities in the area. I was very fortunate to have a nice paid position as a singer in a choir in the Godfrey Alton area. And so most of the challenges were good things as I look back that really helped me grow.
The biggest challenge was just trying to get everything done in the time that you had and still study.
Yeah, it was. We were on quarters then.
Oh, yes.
And the last two quarters of that undergraduate experience for me in 1978, I took 18 hours, and the last one I took 22 hours, which just about killed me. But that was I was committed to try to finish in 4 years, and I did. And so, yeah, that was a definite challenge.
Yeah, I do remember that. I think I had one quarter. I think I had 21 hours, one quarter. And as I left early, I was supposed to graduate in May, and I had a job offer to start in January, and I was 1 hour short of graduation. So I proficiencied a math class and got my hour and went ahead and graduated. So it worked out well. But the campus was a lot of fun back then. I remember walking, to and from the buildings like you. I spent much of my time here in the communications building, as we called it, at the radio and TV stations.
So one of the things that I talk to students about now, and it kind of makes them smile, is one of the favorite spots for photos now is at the Cougar in front of the University Center. And I tell them, I was actually here when we had a live cougar. And the cougar, Shimago, was in a cage that was located between the communications building, or Dunham for people who know it by that name now. And there was a piano studio, which is where I had my lessons, not too far from where Prairie and Woodland residence halls mm-hmm. were. And so almost every day in going back and forth, I would stop by the cage and spend a little time with Shimega. And I thought that was the most amazing thing as a kid who had grown up in the country to be able to sit there and just watch a real cougar, a mountain lion. That was a lot of fun.
Well, not only could anyone, see her here. The Alpha Phi Omega was part, many of our members were part of the Cougar Guard mm-hmm. back then, who, took care of Chimega. And I remember ball games when, before SIU, they didn't have the bowl gym back then. They held basketball games at Edwardsville High School, and we would get to take Chimega to the games. And yeah. She'd be walking around the track upstairs. And, here's a live cougar. Yeah, she was declawed, defanged and whatnot, but I mean, she was really just a big pussycat. Mm-hmm. She loved being scratched.
I talked to one of the cheerleaders from that era, and he was talking about what you were just mentioning, that he would actually be in charge of Shimega. And sometimes, Shimega kind of rub the head against his leg and then sometimes get a little playful and kind of mm-hmm. bite. But since there weren't any fangs, not really too much to worry about there.
Yeah, it was, could you imagine doing that today?
No.
If someone brought the proposal to you, I don't think it would go very far, would it?
Yeah. Well, as I understand it, after Shimega passed, the university had a second cougar. Mm-hmm. And that cougar the culture changed and the people's attitudes changed. And so that was a very short-lived interaction with the second SIUE cougar.
Yeah, the second one, she didn't have quite the same disposition as Shimega. And mm-hmm. she was a little harder to handle And you're right, it kind of changed. But, life changes, I guess, as you go forward. But it does bring to mind a lot of good times, a lot of experiences that we talk about 30, 40 years later. So obviously they made an impact. You mentioned earlier you went to, was it Florida State?
That's right.
Florida State for your PhD after you left SIUE. What were your experiences there?
Florida State University, I had mentioned that I was not a resident when I came here. when I moved to Tallahassee, I lived very close to campus, and so I was right on the periphery. And so that was really my first experience of being kind of a residential college student. And Florida State was growing at that time. I moved down there in 1980, and it was right at the beginning of the Bobby Bowden football boom. Mm-hmm. And so the institution went from 20-some thousand students when I was down there, which was a large institution, toward today, I think it's in the mid-40s and 40,000 students. And so the energy and excitement around that was really amazing. The music school at that time was also one of the best in the country. So I went from having a great music experience here to one of the best music education programs in the United States. And the program here was at SIUE was kind of a traditional program preparing you to be a high school band teacher or choral teacher. The focus down there was on education, empirical research. Does it make a difference if you teach students in a certain way versus a different way? And there was an emphasis on technology. There was something called personal computers that were to come on the scene. And so I took programming classes and developed teaching modules and things that were computer-based. So it was very exciting to me to be in that kind of an environment. And I have to say my SIUE preparation really helped me at Florida State.
Well, it's come a long way. And you talk about I did some programming classes when I was out here. At the time, we were using punch cards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running them through. You know, you design the program and do the punch cards and run it through and come back in a day or so and see if you got it right. And you make one change, run it through, and so forth. But so we've come a long way to the time of the first Apples in the mid-80s have certainly changed.
The first time that I registered when I was in Tallahassee, Florida, we went to this gymnasium, and you just wandered the gymnasium, and you got these green cards, these punch cards, and you went to a table at the end, and they put them in a tray, and then you were registered. And it was all quite mysterious, you know, mm-hmm. how these green cards could actually mean that you're okay, you can go take a class now.
I actually did that in the Meridian Ballroom. Several years we went in there and yeah, you go station to station, you pick up your card. And if you got a card, you were happy. If you didn't, maybe you would get go on a waiting list, but, yeah, times have come about. So, so you spent some time in Florida, and from there, where did you go?
I was in Florida until 1987, and I moved from Tallahassee to Kansas City, Missouri, the University of Missouri, Kansas City Conservatory of Music. And that was kind of an interesting story because the music education professor at UMKC came to Florida State on a sabbatical to study things about empirical research, about technology that I was just talking about. And so when she went back in 1987, the spring of 87, to Kansas City, she called and said, "We have a job. You might consider coming out." And I had been in Florida for 7 years at that point, and I was kind of missing the Midwest, to tell you the truth, growing up in this area. Missed the trees turning in the fall, and actually, I kind of got over those brutal winters and kind of missed a little bit of the seasonal change, and so I came back to the Midwest and Kansas City at that point.
Well, the change in seasons, one thing that I've found, and we my wife and I dearly love going to Florida for, you know, we're moving it up. We started a week, then 2 weeks. Now, sometimes we're pushing 3 weeks. Spend a little bit more time. I love the warm weather, but the change in seasons just makes you appreciate it that much more when you come home. And I have never spent a Christmas that isn't cold, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might warm up here a little bit, but Christmas and snow, I'm not sure I can deal with that very well. So I guess we'll see. We'll get to that point at some point. And I found also in life is, you know, you have to take every opportunity and consider it, because many times you don't know the road that is presenting itself until it does, and then you make decisions, and that's what forms our life as we go forward.
Well, to that point, people ask me, so you're in music and music education, and tell me about administration. And I say, it's just one of those forks in life. When I went to UMKC, I went as an assistant professor, and the person that was the chair of music education, music therapy, he passed away my first weekend at UMKC. Wow. And so the assistant dean came in just a day or two into my time there and said, how would you feel about being chair of a department? And so that was interesting to me at 27 to be asked, would you like to be chair? But that's kind of how things go sometimes.
Well, and ideally, whether you want to call it luck or opportunity, as the saying goes, is, you know, luck is strictly when the preparation and opportunity meets, you get lucky, or so some people say. I want to take just a moment, though, to thank our underwriters. We wouldn't have a show here on WSIE FM 88.7 The Sound if it wasn't for the Chef Shop located here in Edwardsville. I'm sure you've been by there, have you not?
Absolutely.
I know your wife loves it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great place to go, both Scott and Nancy. Scott is an alum. He was out here in MassCom a little bit after I was, so we have another alumni sponsor. And they're located at 2320 Troy Road in Edwardsville. They have lots of activities for the fall. We've got Thanksgiving coming up. We've got Christmas. If you can't find a gift for an occasion, they certainly have. I just can't imagine not finding something in there if you go talk to Nancy or Scott. You also, if you mention it, you heard the show, the Financial Cafe on WSIE, we, I believe, still have some of our thermal coffee mugs, which we're giving away free. So just ask them. They should have some. They haven't called me and told me they've run out yet. So we'll be and Chancellor, I did bring one for you to make it official. So
thank you very much.
I will give you that before you leave. So you have an official Financial Cafe. And they really work well. I put coffee in the morning. It's still warm in the afternoon. Hmm. So or, you know, keeps them cold, too.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks to the Chef Shop. And this is the first show I get the opportunity to say. We have a second underwriter who's come on board. Tommy Brown, who's a Granite City native, also an SIUE grad in the accounting and finance department. Tommy agreed this week to become an underwriter. He is a certified tax resolution specialist. And I had to ask him when I heard that. I had my own ideas of what he did. But he gave us, I did an interview a week ago with Tommy, and he kind of filled me in. And he helps people who get in trouble with the IRS. Mm. If they have failed to file taxes, never a good idea. Or if they have understated income and they get that letter and they're getting to the point the IRS is locking the doors and coming after their wages, that is what he specializes in, helping people take care of. He also gives some good tax advice, and I'm challenging him on that one. I told him on the show I thought I had a pretty good idea of being in the financial business of what my tax situation was. So we're going to talk further about that, see if he can come up with anything. But Tommy Brown, he is located here in Edwardsville. He has an office not far from campus, and he's come on as an underwriter. So anybody, if you're having any questions regarding that, he does give a complimentary review, particularly for business owners, to give you the opportunity to see if he can help you out. And I hope you don't have IRS problems, but if you do, he's a man to see. You can reach him at 407-3674. That's 618 area, of course. 618-407-3674. Thanks to Tommy. Thanks to the Chef Shop for helping to underwrite the show. So, back at what is the funniest thing that has happened to you during your career regarding administration?
Funniest thing. Well, I would say that when I was a dean at the conservatory at UMKC, so I started as assistant professor and I became chair, and so this kind of all ties in and it goes in a big circle, but I started piano when I was young, and I have to say it wasn't my favorite thing to do. I'd rather be playing baseball or whatever than taking piano lessons. But there was a book called Teaching Little Fingers to Play, and it was written by an individual who, it turned out, I found out when I was dean at the UMKC Conservatory, he had been dean at the Kansas City Conservatory at the time that he wrote that book. And so I ended up back at his desk in his chair about 40 years later. And wow. So it was kind of a full circle kind of thing, just about how life goes around and comes around.
Yeah, it certainly does. So when did you know it was time to come home?
I really enjoyed my time in Kansas City. Kansas City is a great town for the arts. It was really the first time I had lived in a big city. I grew up about an hour north of St. Louis, went to Tallahassee, which was about 100,000. But I lived in Kansas City for over 20 years. And I got married my second year that I was in Kansas City. We had two kids. Our kids grew up in the Kansas City area. They had a great life experience there. And so I worked at UMKC. I worked at an institution called Baker University. And then I worked at Washburn University in Topeka, Kansas. And there was always kind of a feeling of it would be good to come back. I came back and visited my family. Most of my family are still here in Greene County. So I was trying to create some stability for my kids as they grew up and they went through school. So they went to K-12, and then they went to college in the Kansas City area. And my older daughter 2 years ago said, you know what, I think I'm moving to Central America. And my younger daughter said, I think I'm moving to Florida. So really, we didn't have any roots then to keep us in Kansas City. That happened about the same time that the SIUE job description came out. And they both said, you know, if you're going to go, this would be a great time to go. Don't stay in Kansas City for us because we're not going to be here. And so I applied for this position, and things just worked out just right. And I ended up coming back in August of 2016. I started.
And lots of fun since then, right?
Yeah, it's most days. People ask me, how do you like being chancellor? And I say, most days it's fantastic. There have been some challenges, as you know, about the Illinois budget. And seems like there's always something unusual happening, whether it's lead in the water or interactions with the community in some way. But the people here have just been very supportive. It's been a thrill for me to see how SIUE has changed. The academic reputation has continued to grow. The faculty and staff here have done an amazing job. The residential nature of SIUE has changed dramatically from the time I was here. Instead of having 200, I mean, we're more than 10 times that in terms of a residential community. And if you count the students that live within a mile, I mean, it's more like 5,000 or 6,000 students that go here that live very close to the campus. And so it's a dynamic environment. It seems like there's always something happening. There's something happening. The homecoming, we just had homecoming a week ago. Just so many people involved in great ways with SIUE now.
So what excited you most about coming back to campus?
I think it was there were two things. I just mentioned that how SIUE was changing and continuing to grow and taking on really a regional and a national presence. So that was one of the things that I think was important. The other thing that as I looked at this opportunity, I think that SIUE as a university is located in an amazing place. Southwest Illinois, I didn't really know this until I was preparing for the interviews, but the two county area, St. Clair and Madison counties, that's the second most dense population in all of Illinois. Of course, Chicago's the first, but after you get out of the Chicago metro area, this area, Southwest Illinois, is the most dense part of the state. So there's a population base here in terms of recruiting students, but it also means that when you look at Southwest Illinois and the metro St. Louis area, students have an incredible opportunity. So when we talk about internships and being able to do senior capstone projects, there are fantastic places to do that in this area. And I think that's one of the things for the future in terms of our growth. We're just positioned incredibly well. So I kind of make the joke that if you grow up in a small town like I did and you want a rural environment, come to SIUE because we have 2,660 acres and deer all over everywhere. If you grew up in a suburban environment, Edwardsville is an incredible place. It's one of the 25 safest cities with a university in the entire country. It has great restaurants. It has great shopping, so you'll enjoy that. And if you grew up in an urban environment, we can see the arch from our campus. We're 20 minutes from downtown, so you have all of those wonderful professional opportunities. opportunities like the St. Louis Symphony, like the St. Louis Cardinals. It's just, it's an incredible environment. So I'm excited to be here.
So I hope Amazon is listening.
I hope so, too. I mean, one of the things that's really nice is that we have two of their buildings with 2,200 employees that's 5 minutes from campus. So it'd be a great way for them to expand into an area where they already have great roots and great opportunities.
And we have lots of land and a very qualified workforce, certainly in the area. So as that proposal goes forth, it's hard to believe it is even possible, but if we are so fortunate, whether it's between St. Louis and Kansas City and this area, I think certainly we're going to see nothing but good growth as we go forward, being in the middle of the country.
Well, one of the things that we talk about, and certainly the Southwest Illinois Leadership Council, we talk about logistics. And I think that our area is really prepared for that with the Mississippi River, with all of the railroad traffic, the airport traffic, major airports in this area, and the interstate system. So many of those interstates come together in our area. And so Amazon, they celebrated their 1 year anniversary for those distribution hubs and had a chance to go through that. And it's really amazing what's happening there. But we could do more. If they wanted to have the headquarters in this area, that would be a great thing.
We could probably work something out.
We probably could.
I don't know if we have enough over in the University Park, enough land, but I'm sure we could come up with something. Just in case.
Yeah. Well, we have about between 200 and 300 acres over there, and I think that's roughly what they're looking for in terms of a footprint.
It sounds like a great fit to me because, and it is such a great, having grown up here, born and raised, you know, I've seen it grow from the time before SIU was even a campus. Mm-hmm. It was farmland, and then all of a sudden popped up. I appreciate the fact that it was just in the nick of time for me, since I was the first one in my three other siblings who did attend college, that it was right in our backyard and probably wouldn't have happened otherwise. So many good things happening. So when you did come back to campus, what was the thing that surprised you most about it?
Well, as you might guess, as chancellor, I'm here in the evenings for a lot of events. I'm here on the weekend when we have great things occurring on campus. And the thing that was just different than what I remember is a constant student presence. So it really doesn't matter when you're here. There are students that are going from the residence halls to our buildings and back and doing things in the quad. And it has a dramatic feel of a university. And I don't know what your experience was, but sometimes in the late afternoon, it got a little thin on campus back in the 1970s.
No doubt.
People did their courses. They were here in the morning, early afternoon, and then it got kind of quiet. I'm not sure that this place gets quiet anymore.
My experience, it does not. As you are well aware, having been on the Alumni Association board for 10 years, I believe, and now in the foundation board, I too am out here at Berger Hall at a lot of meetings all times of the day and night, as well as the events for homecoming, as well as we have a legacy event, which is happening over this weekend to bring back or to bring parents, second generation, I guess, of parents. I attended, graduated from SIU. My wife graduated as a later attending student, and our daughter graduated as well as a number of my nieces and nephews. So it certainly has served the family well. But you're right. Driving through campus, the biggest thing now is you have to kind of time it to miss when classes are letting out and people are going home, because you do get a lineup that I haven't seen in a long time on the roads coming in and out.
You mentioned the family members that had attended here. I have six or seven brothers, nieces, nephews, et cetera, that attended. And, one of the things that we're trying to do is develop new traditions. And so this weekend, actually, is going to be the first time that we have Family Legacy Weekend at SIUE. So we're going to be doing some celebrations around people who do have, grandmother, grandfather, grandchild that is here. And so that's going to be fun to see not only how SIUE impacted individuals, but how it affected multiple generations within a family to hear those stories.
Well, it is. And we were fortunate when I began my career, certainly had a lot of experiences and exposures and my wife was able to stay home and raise Christy, our daughter. And then her goal was to get her degree before Christy did. So she went back as an adult attending college and was able to get her degree, not knowing specifically what she was going to do with it. It was in speech communications. And our neighbor, some years later, who was involved in the Southwestern Illinois College, or SWIC, as it's known in the area, asked Diane if she would be interested in teaching and becoming a coordinator. And, of course, it required a degree. So that came into play, and she's been at SWIC in adult education, working with vocational. Now she's coordinator in the Granite City campus, helping students who have not been fortunate enough to get a high school diploma, and they need to get a GED, and it's a free program. So anyone looking for a GED in our district, the SWIC district, certainly, the program is free. They help you through to get your GED. She does job skills. She does resume writing. She does interviewing skills. So she takes those who haven't been as fortunate to help them become productive in life. So there's your ad, honey. But it's a great opportunity to help those kids and give them opportunities and then help them go to college, to go through SWIC maybe as a junior college, and then move from there to SIUE so they can complete. When you came to campus, there's always a lot of challenges, but did you overall feel the transition was easy, or was it difficult?
Well, I think I would answer both, and there were aspects of each. I think the most challenging part of it was that the Illinois system had not established a budget for higher education in 16-17, my first year. And in looking back at the previous years, we had had 100% funding, we had had 29% funding, we had had 53% funding, and then there was a big question mark. And I've been in higher education all of my career, so it's not unusual for someone to say we need to make a 5% adjustment or a 2% adjustment. But when you would ask people, what are you expecting, what do you think the final number will be, no one had any idea. And so to try to provide leadership, to try to provide vision and strategic planning when you don't know whether your budget is $50 million or $100 million or $150 million, those are very different figures.
That's a challenge.
And so what can you do, and what should you be preparing for? So that was probably the biggest challenge. There were some small things along the way. There always is. In a university with 14,000 students with 2,500 employees, it's actually like running a city, and so there are always some things that come up. So whether it's I think I'd been here all of 2 or 3 weeks, and there was a lead in the water, and so we just went through all the processes that you do there. There was a fire. I remember I was in the car, and I got a call from the vice chancellor for administration, and he said, we've had a fire, and my first thought was, oh, my goodness. But it turned out it was a kiln that caught on fire, a roof on fire in one of our art buildings, and nobody was hurt. And so, you know, we dealt with that. But the budget, I think, was the biggest challenge in coming back. The great thing about coming back was that the people, I just think that the people in the Midwest are amazing. They are willing to try things. They cooperate. They're in general, I think they're optimistic. And so people were very friendly. They were welcoming. And the thing that made coming back easier was that, so I have worked at four other institutions other than SIUE. And this is the first one where I've worked that I was an alum. And so in meeting people, and when they say, oh, how are you doing? And when I talk to them, I say, oh, you went to SIUE? Then I can say, I went to SIUE too. And we immediately then have a common base to talk about professors, as you and I just did, about Leonard Van Camp, about the facilities. We can talk about Shimega. We can talk about the bubble gym. All of those memories that people have of SIUE. And so I think that makes it easier to be at a place because we have a common passion, particularly with the alums that I meet.
Well, the familiarity certainly is a big plus, I believe, for anyone coming on campus and looking back over the years, the challenges, the opportunities, And certainly the people we've met here, we still keep in pretty close touch with four or five couples who we went to college with. And we still, you know, we have all had children. Our children are now, some of them having children, second, third generation. And we still get together and talk about things that that have occurred over that period of time. So it's a great, and we, as you know, we love the university. We love, you know, great instructors, great programs. I think as it expands further into the virtual teaching or the online courses as an as a growth area, we're seeing that across the country. And there are some fun things, I think, going on here, if you want to touch base on that for a moment.
Well, let me just say that Ruth Slezinski, I mentioned her as my piano instructor back in the 70s. She is 92, still going strong. She lives in New York, and she still concertizes around the world. So I asked her if she wanted to come back this fall and maybe do something, and she said, well, I'm busy. I have an Asian tour going in the fall. Can you imagine that at 92? So we were fortunate enough that she's going to be back, and she's going to work with some of our students during the week of January 8th to 12th of 2018. So you were talking about keeping in touch with people. There were a few students, music students, that I have talked to since I've been back. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to get a lot of her students that will come back. And then we're also hoping to have a reception for her with the faculty that worked here in the 1970s. I met with the Emeriti faculty group yesterday. And so I think we'll do a couple of neat receptions. But yeah, there are incredible things going on here. The SIUE Community Day that we just had a week ago, we try to do that and invite members of the community to come back and see what's happening. We showcased our newest facility on campus, which is the Student Design Center, which is an expansion of the engineering building. And so from the outside, it kind of looks like a really amazing six-car garage. But what happens is we have these bays where the engineers can design in each of those areas. So if you want to create a solar car, or if you want to work on some kind of concrete canoe, you can do that in an amazing space. And so I could go on and on about the programs that are occurring here, new things all the time. Latest thing, just 2 weeks ago, the Illinois Board of Higher Education approved an online program in Masters in Criminal Justice. So every day seems like there's something new happening academically.
It's always new. And I've attended many of the SIUE days here on campus. I really wanted to be at that one because I wanted to see the engineering building. Guess where I was that morning?
Where?
Sitting right here, recording a show.
Okay.
So
I'll tell you what,
there.
I'll give you a tour.
I would love that. I really would love that because, yeah, it's an amazing building. I spent a little time in the science building, which was the only thing we had back then for engineering in math and whatnot.
Well, that's another success story for us. We will be completing in the next month or so what we call Science East on our campus. After I left, we built another fantastic building that we call Science West. But Science East was the second largest higher education project going on in Illinois in this past year. So it should be open, and I think we'll actually do SIUE Community Day in Science East in 2018. So I hope people will remember that and come by and see us in probably will be September of 2018.
Well, I will make arrangements to try and work around my schedule of being on the air. If we're still on the air by then, hopefully that's so. And speaking of WSIE, what are your thoughts? I mean, the station started back in 1970, as I recall. Certainly John Ryder, certainly Barb, you know, the professors, many of whom are no longer here, certainly. At that period, and it is a 50,000 watt educational station. You know, we have directional antenna pointing towards Illinois as opposed to Missouri, but that was a political thing back then with the FCC. The news format I love. You know, I listen to the jazz, the blues. We love going to jazz at the Bistro in St. Louis, and certainly a lot of the jazz groups from SIUE have performed there. So we have some great venues. But what are your thoughts as far as WSIE?
When I came back, there was a conversation because the budget was so uncertain. There was a question about the future of a lot of things at SIUE and the centers, the radio station, things like that. There were questions. And what I can tell you is that first month or two that I was back, everybody talked about WSIE and how important it was to them and the memories that they had to them. And we were in the process of kind of modifying the format of going to something called The Sound, which has dramatically increased the listenership. We have worked to, you mentioned sponsors before, to find people that want to be involved in the station in that way. And so I think we really have a positive trajectory that has come out of that review in the last 24 months, and I see great things ahead for the station.
Well, we're looking forward to it. I know my partner, John Graney, who well, you know, 90% of the time is here, but clients do interfere with our doing our show. So sometimes you just have to do what you have to do to take care of them. But a lot of memories have gone down the road. Steve Jankowski, of course, unfortunately and fortunately for him, retiring here next May, I believe it is. And Steve and I were in Mass Comm together out here. We studied here at WSIE, as did Dwayne Statz, who went on to great things in the broadcast industry and a number of others. So we're very fond of it. And I talk about one of the other memories that we've had, certainly the MRF, Mississippi River Festival. You've heard, and you probably remember that from the 70s and 80s.
I spent some time out there. But before I talk about that, I will tell you one other thing about the radio station, and that is we went through accreditation with our communication department this past year, and they reminded us of how important it is to have this kind of an experience so students can observe and participate in various ways in the station. So, yeah, our commitment remains strong to WSIE. Mississippi River Festival, oh my goodness. How many people, when I said I'm in Edwardsville, I'm at SIUE, their first response was, oh, Mississippi River Festival. That is what they remember from 30 or 40 years ago about this area. And the tent at the Mississippi River Festival, not only do I remember it from concerts, but I went through a graduation out there. And it had a lot of different functions for the university
yes,
at that time.
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a great venue, just a natural amphitheater. And of course, we celebrated, I was the chairman, actually, of the MRF committee a few years ago when we celebrated the anniversary. I think it was 40 years. It started in 1969 and then went through 1982, I believe, was the last concert that was held out there. St. Louis Symphony, you remember, you know, Chicago. And anybody who was anybody back in that day had performed here. So we did get it on the Illinois State Historical Society. We do have a plaque out there dedicating the site for those who want to go take a look at it, with listing of all of the, or most all of the performances that had occurred. So a lot of fun stuff going on. Well, as I say in every show, unfortunately, we come towards the end of it. They only give me so much time. You know, otherwise, I'd just keep talking as I did years ago. But I do want to thank you for coming on the show today, Chancellor. It's been great. Just, you know, to get to know you a little better, to talk about the history of SIU and about the future. And I don't know, I hadn't posed this before we went on the air, but I'll throw it out there. I don't know, would you be willing to do this on a quarterly basis?
Oh, absolutely. That would be fun.
Just and, to come in and...
There's so many things happening. It'd be nice to catch up and just explain some of the things that are happening. I want to remind the listeners two things that they may not know. Over the last 20 years, SIUE is the fastest growing higher education institution in the state of Illinois. And for those looking for an amazing value, we are the least expensive higher education institution in the state of Illinois. So I think the product that we deliver for folks is something that they'll be very interested in.
Well, without question, and anyone who is thinking or has thought of coming here, feel free to contact me, contact the chancellor, contact so many of the alums. You know, we're over, 100,000 alums now all across the country. And it's interesting. I have a couple of MRF shirts that I got from the celebration of 40th anniversary. And I take them along when I go out of town to Arizona or Florida or Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I, inevitably, somebody walks up to me and says, "You were at the MRF?" I went, "Yeah, I was. When were you there?" "Oh, I was there for," you know, stories begin because it's just, it's an icebreaker. And they see that and they're like, "Wow, I wish I had a shirt." And I said, "Well, I don't have any more." But anyway,
Well, I do something similar. I have an SIUE alum hat, and I wear that whenever I travel. And in the past year, a pilot in the airport at Guatemala and the tour guide at Fort Sumter both commented they knew about SIUE and had come from this part of Illinois.
Wow. Well, you never know who you're going to run into. But thanks again to the Chef Shop. As the Chancellor mentioned, we wouldn't be continuing on the air without underwriters like Chef Shop, Nancy and Scott, an alum, as well as all of the opportunities, the popcorn, the fudge, the coffee. John and I have reviewed every coffee out there. He, of course, likes the stiff one. It'll stand up by itself. And I like some of the other little more mild ones, but they have great coffee. Just a wonderful place to stop by and take a look at things. So go by, give them a call, 659-9840. Get that free coffee cup. It works well. It's a nice thermal mug. If they don't have any more, let us know. We'll order some. As well as Tommy Brown, our new sponsor, newest underwriter for the show. Tommy is just fun to talk to. Give him a call if you would like to discuss further saving taxes. I don't know. You like saving taxes, Chancellor?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who doesn't, right? So Tommy Brown, he is a certified tax resolution specialist. You can reach him at 618-407-3674. So we're wrapping it up for the Financial Cafe for another weekend. Thanks again for coming on. I've really enjoyed talking to you. And I think if we do this quarterly, we can get into some of the marvelous accolades the university has received over nationally and internationally, as well as the alumni, the foundation, all the other things here going on the campus. We've got the holidays coming up. There's lots of exciting stuff with the concerts and the theater and those types of things as we go forward. So again, thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time, Chancellor, and we will look forward to having you back.
It's my pleasure. We have about 100,000 visitors per year. I hope the listeners will be one of those in 2017-18.
You've been listening to the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.